time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you are listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Good morning, Redmond.
Good morning, Patrick. Good to be here as per usual.
We're going well at the moment because we're both sick.
I said to you before, I was going to message and say, I'm actually not too bad, but my whole house is sick except me. So it's coming and I've probably got it. And I said to you, I feel sorry because I'm feeling crap. And you're like, I'll give up. I'm crap too.
And that's off the back of a couple of weeks ago, my wife gets COVID.
Yep.
Second last day of ISO, 7-day ISO, obviously. My daughter tests positive for COVID. Like, it is just, like, I'm wondering, like, why are we still isolating for one?
But if you got the flu and you don't test positive, you can go out and mingle with people. But yet, if you've got COVID,
and that thing will kill you, mate.
Which is worse than COVID.
Way worse.
How's Mia, my youngest, my daughter? She's roughly 12 weeks, give or take. And the poor thing, I reckon she's been sick for 11 weeks of the 12 weeks of her life.
She's been alive.
And like, we kept Finn home from daycare this week for 2 days. I just said to Kari, I said, do not, because daycare is obviously the...
It's the cesspool of sickness.
Someone that's immunosuppressed like myself probably shouldn't be sending a kid to childcare.
I'm surprised there's not actual, you know, actually more brawls with parents as they drop their child off. They say,
it's
coughing
actually,
everywhere. It's like, mate, what are you doing?
I remember when I first had Finn, I was... At the start, anyone that had a cold, like I'm talking 6 months down the track, I'm like, do not come over to my place because if you're sick, do not come. Or
you're so sensitive
My brother's kid, if he's sick, do not come anywhere near Finn. Now I just, if he doesn't have a runny nose, I'm worried.
It's like the second child. The second child, it's like...
Well, you don't care about.
You'll be okay. And then by the third, it's like... The other two will raise the third child. It's fine.
Does that mean that
choking
I actually...
Choking hazards, any of that, it's just like, nah, you'll be fine.
Does that mean we don't... more nights out? That I can...
All I know is my daughter, Felicity, she's three. And we can't control her anyway. So, you know, we're a bit stricter with George. But trying to control that thing, she's like Jack off...
And my eldest is the same. I'm hoping it's the other way. I'm hoping Mia, this one, is more settled. Well, if it's not, I'm getting rid of her. Because, he's just a psycho like your daughter. Kids, why do we have him?
Hey, let's get into a bit of 4x4 news. Yeah. This one packs some punch.
Is this my new car that we're talking about?
Well, I'm not sure it is, but the 2022 Ram 1500 TRX. The pricing and specs have been released for the supercharged V8. Now, are you sitting down? You are, I can see. priced from $199,950 plus on-roads.
That's before on-road.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, for those of you playing at home, that's not actually what you pay. You pay a lot more than that, but the first batch has already been sold out. 6.2-litre V8 supercharged engine, so it's the most powerful four-door there is. That's 200 grand, mate.
Why does it need to go up to, like it says it has a top speed of 190 kilometres an hour?
Which is great. So, for Australian conditions, the vast majority of where we drive, it can get you from 0 to 80 really friggin' quick.
Do you know what the thing is? Driving around these days with some of the way people drive, I don't reckon I've gotten above 70 very often. Like some of our highways, Pat, some of these people driving shouldn't have licenses. Do you get frustrated?
Bloody oath, mate. I used to.
Like, I'm not trying to be an idiot.
Everywhere across the country, serious. I swear, has dropped from, if it used to be 100, it's now 80.
Yeah. And then if it was 80, it's now 70, potentially 60.
Yeah.
And not only that, then you've got the people that are driving, and then, like, Queenscliff and Point Lonsdale is a renowned, we'll call it retirement area. Like, old people. I'm talking old people.
I picked up on that part.
Some should take me 12 minutes to get to the boat ramp. Some days it takes me 23.
And it's not like you can't exactly pass.
There's no overtaking. Yeah. There's like, it's minimal overtaking. The speed limit, like you said before, used to be 100. It's now 80. So yes. Those people that drove 80 in the 100 now drive 60 in an 80. Off topic, that one.
Well, it is. But back to, so the standard fit, tow bar, brake controller, etc. 3.5 ton brake towing rating, gross vehicle mass rated to 3,800.
So that's come down.
Yeah, well, this is what the specs are, reading off.
Because Ram standard is 8 ton normally.
Yeah, well, reading off the drive specs, drive.com.au, who had all the information. So thanks, guys.
Yeah, right.
Gross mass of 6.8. I'm not sure I'm spending 200 grand for that, to be honest.
So what is this? Is this a tow vehicle or is it?
Well, it's a performance vehicle.
It's a performance vehicle. It's sort of like the
Raptor.
The Raptor in the Ford range.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so it's not actually their big towing vehicle, tow vehicle as such, because the reason that people choose Ram is purely for the 8-ton towing, because you don't need to do anything.
That's what was so fascinating about the fact that the first batch has already been sold out. I found it quite extraordinary.
So you're going to spend $200,000 to go drive this on the beach in the dunes to destroy it and cover it in sand and salt?
That literally can't tow your 3.5-ton boat simply because of the logistics around.
Gross mass, etc.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty extraordinary. Hey, the other thing that rolled across the Real Adventures desk during the week, Redmond, was the Vic Fisheries studies around the snapper fishery. And I remember reporting on this on our show, I reckon it was 3 years ago, and it was around Vic Fisheries talking about the snapper fishery and that 2023 is going to be extraordinary. So Vic Fish have been doing these studies for nearly 30 years, which is quite extraordinary when you think of the back catalogue of, yep, this is all the information that we've got to give anglers the best sort of information they can around what they do. So with that being said, with 30 years of all the scientific data, this is the third best result since monitoring began.
Yep.
Which means next year, hopefully, we're going to have a phenomenal year when it comes to snapper fishing.
Exciting.
Often you talk about with the back end of 2022, February, we get sort of some nice warmer weather. This is going
to
hump.
Do you know what worries me? And I'll be one to say, I'm not into... Oh, we were actually talking off air about politics in fishing, weren't we? And I said, I try and stay out of it as much as I can. Now, it says here straight up, you could basically buy or purchase seafood from any of the 8 remaining commercial line fishers.
Yes.
So this is long lining, not netting, because netting is now
illegal.
See you later. Now, we're not talking about that because we're not involved in it. At this point in time, Pat, it's done. But what we are talking about is what I'm worried about is the amount of bait in Port Phillip Bay is out of control. Now, it is...
What do you mean by that?
So, pilchard boats, we'll call them, the commercial pilchard industry.
Yep.
So, those guys had netting licenses through Port Phillip Bay to go out and catch local Port Phillip Bay pilchards.
Yep.
And white bait and whatnot. Now, I knew a few of them, friends of mine. And they used to go out overnight and they had awesome radars on the sonars on the front of their boats. They could shoot forward. They'd shoot, see the pilchards out ahead and they could net them. Now, this was a sustainable fishery, very sustainable. Now, they've taken, because of the netting's banned, they use nets. It's taken out. I know there is...
So you would think the fishery would improve.
So, yeah, the fishery. So, yes, the bait, though, now, no, and I'm not one... Oh, this is all over social media and all the charter boats are saying the same thing. And you literally watch them writing comments about these articles, basically, about the abundance of Port Phillip Bay bait, the bait in Port Phillip Bay. Like, your sounder, you can't even sound the bottom in the 20-metre line. Like, so it literally stacks. Now,
where, so you're saying this is potentially a poor thing for fishing?
Could it be? I don't know. I'm just having the conversation regarding of extended off other people, because why would that one snapper eat that pilchard that you throw in amongst the 50 million that isn't a Port Phillip Bay snapper? Isn't a Port Phillip Bay pilchard.
So you're saying good thing for the fishery, a challenge for the angler.
Is it going to be more challenging? Because yes, the snapper might be, there might be more snapper, but with the amount of bait, because these pilchard guys did take a fair chunk of it, but in a sustainable way.
Yes.
So the fishery is saying that it's a contradicting argument whether who you talk to and whatnot. And like, we're not getting into that. I'm not into the crap.
Everyone's always going to have their view. But in terms of, we're in school holidays at the moment, what's the easiest thing to go fish for? Start with pilchards. But like there's competition for for wreck anglers is because there's so much there.
Yes, that's right. And I'll tell you one thing, mud fishing, when I say mud fishing for snapper, so
you're talking fishing in the bay when the bottom is mud.
Yes, so we're not actually fishing. I tend to fish structure in the bay. Now, over the years and years of people fishing, people have dumped stuff in Port Phillip Bay as well as artificial reefs from Fisheries Victoria. So there's people that have sunk boats, trolleys, you name it.
It's of course, at Real Adventures don't condone.
No, we would never have
sinking of reefs,
no,
sinking
never
of boats,
any involvement in any of that. That'd be
dryers. Like that's sort of what happened. Yeah. Well, certainly when I was in SA, a few mates over there, they perhaps guilty of creating the old artificial reef out of old laundromat sort of excess stock.
Trolley,
but that's hit neither here.
Yeah, trolleys worked really well too. It's
allegedly.
So we often try to target those because that's how I fish productive. I move from dump, we call them dumps, dump to dump to dump to dump to dump to dump. Now, on the mud over the last few years, it has been harder to get fish on the mud than it has on dumps.
Yep.
So all the moving from dump to dump to dump. I know one charter
flat
in particular.
Bottom structure versus genuine structure.
And is that a bait thing? Harder to sound fish because sometimes I cannot, if I'm talking for kilometres, I can't sound the bottom.
Yeah.
Like you're just getting bait and then all of a sudden it clears up a little bit and then you get more bait and you can't get through the bait sometimes. And if you do get through the bait, the picture goes a bit funny on the bottom because it's still trying to push through the other bait. Like it's so I don't know what it's going to do for the fishery in itself, but one thing is fisheries are confident that these snapper that they take when they run their, when they do the checks and the shallow reefs where the snapper spawn, they where these babies live, baby snapper live, they're 3 to 8 centimetres long, up to 10 centimetres, and that's the ones that they're counting, and they are in the biggest numbers, like you said before, top three. So that there is great to see. Will the pilchard game have an effect on it, that the more bait that is in the water, is it going to make it harder for us wrecks to catch? Don't know. We're going to find out the more years that this goes on. Will they allow the pilchard industry to come back? Good chance, because I don't want to... I don't know. I reckon it is. Well, do you want to go buy a WA pilchard and throw a WA pilchard? You got to think about it. Those pilchards...
If I'm from WA, I want to fish something that's been caught locally. Yep. So, I'm the same in Victoria, South Australia.
So how it works, the charter boat guys go to, this, for instance, a netting company. So there was one in Williamstown that I bought through, Pat, and they'd go there and they might buy, say, 500 kilos of pilchards charter boat guys would buy. They'd pack the good ones up, IQ effort, individually freeze it, and then they'd have also their burly ones. So it literally gets caught in Port Phillip Bay, goes to the shop, goes back to the charter boys. Now, I'm referring to charter because it's the biggest industry in Port Phillip Bay, that charter fishery.
Yes.
It is huge. And I'm only and it's great. The charter industry is fantastic. And what they do, it's just like a cycle. It goes in Port Phillip Bay, it comes out, and it gets put back in a big circle. Now, we're buying twofold or whatever you want to call it from Eden Bay. You got Eden there and you got twofold pilchards. You got buying those, you're buying WA pilchards, and they're coming from different states now and getting thrown into our bay, and they're not the same pilchard.
Yep.
So will it come back? I don't know. I hope it does. There's there's that much bait in the water for everyone. It's never been an issue. So let's just hope I hope it does come back. But the families have already shut up shop and sold their businesses, so I don't know on that argument too.
Yeah. Flathead rules in New South Wales are going to change from August 1. 10 dusky flathead
down to five
per person between 36 and 70 centimetres, changing from one fish.
Over 70. So you can't keep anything over 70 centimetres now.
Which is what happens with Maricot. Over a certain size, you've got to release it. Well, which I think is a great thing. And I think if you chat to most of the guys that genuinely target these really big flathead, they all let them go because it is like... They're just gold for them, like the brim fishermen as well that genuinely target them. They think they're just beautiful, and they'll release them. They'll put them. The competitions. The great thing about these sort of flathead and brim comps, or particularly the brim, they'll put them in the live bait tank, weigh them at the end, bang,
put them back,
release them. It's fantastic. It's brilliant. It's how it should be done. But the changes to New South Wales, good thing, bad thing.
It's their size limit is tremendous. 36 centimetres for a dusky, like that's sustainable fishery. Like that's a big fish to be legal. Like in Victoria here, I think it's 27.
Yep.
So it's not very big. 10 centimetres is a big fish, like big difference in a fish size nearly. Like, so yeah, good on fisheries. If they've got to do what they've got to do. I don't think you need to keep something over 70 centimetres.
No, not those big girls, big crocodiles, those things.
We've got a question for you after the break too. I know you're going to throw to a break in a second, and I've got a question for you regarding barrel tuna. Straight off the block, I am guilty for the question at times, so it's a little bit of a go at me too and other anglers, so
looking forward to that.
After the break.
We've got a massive show of Real Adventures coming your way. We're going to chat with Nick from Tidal Marine & Co. It's a great chat talking about their 24, a beautiful boat, Carolina Flair Redmond.
Yep.
Like something straight out of the States. All that and more this morning on Real Adventures.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
It's time to find out what's biting in your part of the country. All thanks to Jayco Sydney, your next great escape. Let the adventure begin with Jayco Sydney. We start in New South Wales. The yellowfin are up and about, Redmond. We've been talking about this for a while and how they haven't exactly been firing, but we've got a few fresh reports.
We do, and last week it was like we spoke about it.
Because we did.
It was 10 minutes after we spoke about it. The first report came through of just chaos. So we said there was a few fish getting caught. This week just went nuts.
Yep.
On the back of that new moon, or that on the lead, the couple of days over that moon, just went stupid, Pat. There was the whole southeast coast of New South Wales. So we're talking Tarthra, Burmie, Ulladulla, right down to Eden. Just fish up to 80 kilo.
Now, they can be hard to get on lures, but it's the most rewarding part. If you are going to target them on them, best chance of success?
That sounded like me talking then. Your best chance of success is actually...
Well, I was just, you know, what's the best... I want to hit them on lures.
Yep.
It's the most exciting.
I'd be getting in front with stick baits. So the lures have been okay, but there's a lot of frustration from anglers trying to get into position to get them because they're on souries. Souries are moving on the top. They're jumping out of the water. They're chasing hard. They're not balling. They're chasing.
Yep.
So it's hard to get on top of those fish. So
because you want to get ahead of them, essentially.
You want to get ahead. Let them work that towards you. And if you can get a stick bait in front of jumping fish, it's going to be a very big reward. So stick baiting if you can't get them on lures.
Some huge flathead off Kernel.
Yeah, there was on soft plastics. But the key to it that I read was bigger jig heads, smashing that sand, bit of dust, flathead are coming out and feeding much more erratic than a smaller jig head. So don't be afraid to use big plastics as well, because those big flathead,
they will
just absolutely nail them. Jazz Charters in WA, great success out of Frio this week.
Fish to 8 kilos.
Massive. And then the odd kingfish. So Jazz Charters out of Frio are doing really, really well. And the queenfish out of Bundaberg has been great too. Trawling, and then also...
One of the most exciting fish to catch, queenfish.
I don't think I was... You and I got absolute my first beauties. One up north off Cairns, and I was so excited. I'd never caught one
Well,
before.
Not a great eating fish, but a great catching fish.
And put up on a bloody show and a half, didn't it? Jumping out of the water like it was a bloody dolphin.
South Australia, Port Mac continues to see phenomenal captures
just
of southern bluefin.
Beyond stupid.
Best chance to get them? Are we hitting it morning? What are we chasing?
Just at the moment, any time at the minute, just...
It's just time and water,
it's
though.
Just... But it's out of control. Like, the fishing is out of control. Like, I'm talking people are getting 3 to 8 bites a day, Pat. Like, it's... And majority of boats, if you haven't caught one, it's actually ruining barrel fishing because it's not even a challenge. Like, it's really gotten easy. I don't mean to be a prick about it, but they are there and plentiful.
King George Whiting in Burnie Vincetown of Stansbury is fishing well. Goorwa Beach, the elephant sharks have moved in on good numbers. Squid have been the best bait to target them. Tasmania, Redmond.
Yeah, East
seeing
Coast.
Seeing some trumpeter.
Yeah, the Tassie trumpeter in Tasmania, how original. But they are a great fish to catch. They pull hard and they eat just as good too, and they're going well. Silver Trevally in the Stanley have been plentiful also, and on just little plastic grubs. So small jig heads this time, and grubs, you want them to sink slow. The slower they go, the more the tail does their thing, and the more fish you'll catch.
About as original as the bloke that named the Sydney Harbour Bridge. There's a bridge. It's in Sydney. Goes over a harbour. Sydney Harbour Bridge. Well, you have to go at the Tassie trumpeter guy.
I'm impressed where that just went. Sorry,
that was a dad joke, wasn't it? Real dad joke sort of stuff. Queensland, save us. Get us out of here.
Moreton
Queensland.
Bay, the last report, because we're running out of time, is Moreton Bay is going great too. Snapper fishing. It's just been red hot. Soft plastics, different fishery to here in Vic in South Australia, and fish to 5 and 6 kilo. So make sure you get to Moreton Bay if you're in that area and grab yourself a snapper or six.
That's what's biting right around the country. Thanks to Jayco Sydney, your next great escape. Let the adventure begin with Jayco Sydney.
All aboard for Dometic. Make your next adventure effortless with the Dometic Go Collection. Just pack, stack, and go.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for All Aboard. Go on your next adventure at Dometic.com. Our special guest this morning is Nick Davis from Tidal Marine & Co. Good morning, Nick.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're going well. Now, we've been trying to track you down for some time because we've been really keen to discuss the 24 and 21-foot handcrafted boats that you build. Now, they are beautiful. It is like something from North Carolina in the States. There's just something beautiful about the flair. So we're stoked to get you on this morning. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, no, cheers for having me. And, look forward to sharing some of what we do with you guys. So
be good. Let's go back to the start. Tell us about how it all began for you, your passion for fishing, and clearly your passion for boating.
Basically grew up in Cairns, North Queensland. My dad was in the marine industry for many years and moved to Cairns, I think. Oh, I was about 9 or 10 from Sydney. And from there, basically, if I wasn't at school, I was out on the reef with my dad. He had Haynes Hunters, and he was also very good mates with Billy Bilson, who owned Viking and Viking 2. And I learnt game fishing through Billy on the original Viking. And it was just a lifestyle for us, you know. And then that's where the passion came from. Originally, I wanted to be a charter boat skipper and go over to the USA and chase white marlin and tuna and fish through North Carolina and all those areas. But life took a different direction and ended up being involved in boat building. So obviously not attending a school as much as I should have. Probably.
That's a common theme for our guests, Aaron. That is a common theme for our guests.
That's right. So I was going to, you know, thought I'd be nice to be a naval architect, but became a boat builder, and I'm glad I did because to me it's more hands-on. And, yeah, you just, you know, get the freedom to build, you know, what you want and, yeah, run with it. So,
well, it obviously didn't start at Tidal. When did that begin for you, where it was, you know, your own business began the construction of your own boats and that journey?
A quick one in my journey really started with Dick Ward, where we built the Tradition in Kanahoe, which were 50-foot game boats, the Pirate 30s. I did some time at Cyclone High Performance Boats, building ski race boats, offshore race boats, center consoles. And then from there, I started my own company in Cairns for a short period. And then sort of needed a bit of a break from the industry. So I ran a few fishing tackle shops here in Perth and did a bit of traveling around Australia during that time. And then from there, it was sort of like, well, the itch is back and the passion's back. So my wife and I, we sort of put together a bit of a game plan to start a company, a boat building company. So we, like everyone, you try and figure out a name, and to be competitive in today's market, you got to find your own niche. And my passion for custom-built game boats and the North Carolina-style flair and whatnot, we sort of had a direction for Tidal.
Which is very unique in the Australian boat-building market, the style of your design.
Yeah, so that's part of finding your own niche and having your own little area that you can sit in, so you're not building something the same as everyone else. Obviously, all the hulls and top decks are all the same, but we can custom build the internals. We can change seating. We can delete live bait tanks. We can have aft steering stations, change window design. So we have a lot of flexibility in that side of building the titles. Obviously, we would have loved to started our own hull from scratch. You know, whether it was off a jig and or having a big plug CNC routed up, the cost was just unaffordable for us. So we actually managed to find the original Savage Ranger molds. That hull ceased production in about 1981.
But they are an iconic Australian boat.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So really nice, sharp forward entry, 58 degrees, bearable, 21 degrees at the transom. So we bought the original mould and built one hull out of the original mould, and we modified the running surface. We put just over 200 mil more freeboard into the side of the hull, new shear line, all new top deck. Yeah, did a lot of modifications to the hull to try and make it our own, but also we never shied away from saying that it was based on the original Savage Ranger. So it was still had some of that Australian history and old school feel to it.
Nick, I've been fortunate enough to see your boat in action. John Joubert bought Maruta off you not too long ago, and he lives around the corner from myself. And I've done some fishing next to him, and the one thing that I noticed when I first seen this boat, and I'm tipping this would be probably, the most common comment that you get about your boat, is the flare. It's a significantly big flare that separates water perfectly. What come into the design of that? Because it's so unique. I know it's coming from, the Carolina sports fishermen that you've spoken about, but you've handcrafted it. It's an amazing looking boat. Like the flare on it, like you've got all old school Haneses, you've got all these different boats around our country that are made for game fishing, but I'd have to say your flare is so unique when you look at it, and it just looks so appealing as someone that does a lot of traveling on actual water in itself, on big kilometers like myself. It's so appealing. Just go, geez, you just know straight away that that's going to push through water. Like that, you just look at it and tell that's going to push water nicely.
Yeah, well, that was the thing about the title. It was about building a boat that was going to be able to handle most seas, you know, be safe, get the family or your fishing mates, you know, back in one piece. Whether if it was going to blow up to 25, 30 knots on the way home, you just know that she's going to come through it unscathed. And for me, it's all about the front section of a hull that does all the work in rough water. I mean, usually in rough water, most of us don't do over 24, 28 knots. So usually in those conditions, the back of the transom and back part of the hull isn't coming out of the water. So it's the front forefoot and the bow section that's pushing through and doing all the hard work. So you want a nice forefoot, big flare, and you know, as it comes down into a trough, it breaks the water, and then the flare pushes the water out.
Yep.
But you'll find some days, obviously, if it's howling wind, all that water gets picked up by wind and still comes over. But you know, that just is what it is.
That's why, Patrick. Now, this is no offense to Nick and his boats, Pat, but being a Victorian, that center console that he does isn't appealing to me, because we don't have any temperatures above 10 degrees down here, Nick. It's like I said, it's nothing to do with your boat. It's the state that it's a state that I live in. So it'd have to be that beautiful hardtop that I'm looking at right now in front of me, which you can see on Tidal Marine's Instagram page.
But the one difference I will say with a flare such as this on a center console versus simply taking a hull that was a hard top and turning it into a center console, you don't have the same spray because of the flare. That's the difference between taking any old hull and, you know, taking the cabin off it and then turning it into a center console. Well, it wasn't designed for that reason. It was designed with a cabin on top because you were going to get spray. So there is a bit of a differentiator there.
Yeah. It's funny, our 21 actually has slightly little bit more flair than 24. So 21 came from the 24. It's 550 mil shorter than the 24. But she's actually got slightly more flair but less freeboard. So it's our center console is a really, really dry hull. It's an amazing little hull, quite beamy as well for its length. And obviously we do that in a runabout version now as well.
Yep.
But we're finding for some reason the 21 center console's a bigger seller than the 21 runabout.
That's because you've got a thing called sun, Nick.
Most of the sales are going to the East Coast for the 21. So, and the 24 enclosed would be 50-50 East Coast, West Coast. So,
and that's a big boat, the 24, Nick. Like, let's talk the 24. Like, some of the photos you've got on your socials, Tidal Marine and Co. Those willing to check it out on Instagram or on Facebook, you can do that, or head to the tidalmarineandco.com.au website. The 24 is a big boat. We're talking maxi trailable, and something that is capable of fishing canyons, not just offshore, but significant distance offshore.
Yeah, that's right. We do a standard fuel tank capacity of 540 litres in the 24, and we can go up to 600-700 litres with no problem at all.
Do you shout the first tank?
No, not at the moment. Sure.
That's actually more expensive than the boat.
It adds an extra 100,000 to the cost.
Oh, yes. Jesus, yeah, these petrol prices.
That's exactly right. But we're fortunate that the 24 with a single engine is still under 3.5 ton on an alloy trailer.
Perfect.
And that's the beauty.
That's terrific.
So with twin 200 Suzukis, half fuel, safety gear, water, she'll come in at 3.6 ton.
Yep.
And then fully loaded with gear, full fuel, she's sitting around that 4 ton mark. So
it'll be interesting to see as whether these become even more popular as we see the big US car manufacturers start to infiltrate the Australian market more. Like, we're seeing so many of the big rams.
Yeah, towable-wise, you know, yeah.
Nick, obviously that's the next frontier for Australian fishing. We're just seeing how popular, and you would see this firsthand as a manufacturer, how popular the maxi trailable boats are, because the rams, we're seeing them everywhere. We're seeing Ford coming into this market
upgraded Land Cruisers,
etc. Yeah,
absolutely. I feel definitely the Australian boating manufacturers are starting to notice this too, that Australian-built boats have certainly got a great reputation. And, you know, especially the guys that are more production, their fit out and finish, you know, matches what the Yanks are sending over as well. Obviously, we're just a little small semi-custom builders. We're definitely on a different scale to some of those bigger guys. A big one for me will just be watching where the economy goes for the next 6-12 months. We do have an 8 meter that we're working on, but I think we're just going to sort of hold back off that idea and just tick away on the plug itself, and we'll just watch the economy. I think that 21, 24 foot's just really going to be that perfect
nice, sweet spot.
Yeah,
trailer boat. Yeah, exactly. It's still manageable. If you can have a 24 with a single 300, you know, it's going to cruise between 24, 27 knots. You know, still tops out at 44, 45 knots, wide open throttle. And that's achievable for most people who are, you know, in that field of boats. So our boats will go from 180,000 to 260,000. It just depends on the fit out and engine choices.
Depends if the tank comes through.
Yeah, free fuel. Yeah. It's under $2, we're right.
If you want more information on Tidal Marine and Co., you can hit Nick up on his email, nick@tidalmarineandco.com.au. Their phone number is 0439070 176 or head to their website, titlemarineandco.com.au. Nick, thank you so much for your time this morning and talking about your fishing journey and fishing history and the evolution of Tidal Marine.
Yeah, no, great for having me, guys. And next time you're over, give us a shout and we can go and catch up for a cold beer.
Always up for that. I thought he was going to say fish, but he sold me with beer.
That was All Aboard for Dometic. Go on your next adventure, dometic.com. It's time for Red's Review, our product review of the week. Redmond, what do you have for us this morning?
Just want to talk a little bit about transducers.
Yes.
Now, the reason for it is, I've actually seen a written article during the week.
You saw it or you read it?
It was a visual.
Well, of course, if you're going to read it.
I can't read. it was a photo too. No, it was on social media.
Love the picture books.
I actually can read Finn's books to him. They make me feel better about myself. No, I was on social media, and I can't remember exactly where it came from, but it was just discussing basically travelling out of the Gold Coast, and they have a different fishery to what you and I have here in Victoria, but it was about travelling at speed and just finding new reefs and things along the way.
Yeah,
so what I'm talking about is actually travelling to place to place. Now,
mate, I have this problem with my Stabycraft.
Yeah, you would, because it's a... So
you're going to...
Transom mount transducer.
Yeah, so you're going to talk about through mount.
So through hull transducers.
Mate, because it's bolted on the back.
Yep. You don't have anywhere.
I cannot. No. If I get above like 7 knots, it is...
blurred out.
I cannot. There's nothing. Zero.
We'll come clear again. I'd say about... So you'd probably lose it at around that 7 to 8 knots. You'll start to get interference. Then it will clear up at about 15 knots for about another... If at about 30K, you'll get a little bit of clarity, and then if you go even a little bit harder, you'll lose it.
Bang on.
Most of the time. Yep. Like, so you can get them where they're fitted and you get lucky in it, and they are a bit better. But the problem with transom mount is you get a lot of interference from water. So you get engine noise. Yeah. You also get movement of the ocean. So
well, that's what
weather.
It is for me. It's the... Because I have mine set up a little bit higher.
Because of the beach launching?
Because of the beach launching. And really, if I think back and go, it made no sense not to actually... Next time, I'll put a through hull because even though there is a little bit of dragging on the beach, it's not a hugely significant amount.
Yep.
But it's far less than jamming that transducer in at the back of the boat as you winch it up. Yeah.
Especially with rocks and things too.
Exactly,
Well, I'm going to go into that in 2 seconds, but just the benefit of a through hull is clear. The clarity of the picture is 10 times a transom mount, especially in rougher weather. So as soon as you go in a following sea, so you've got sea coming with you with a transom mount, you'll have a relatively good picture, nearly on par with a through hull. Probably not quite, but nearly. But as soon as you go into a head sea and it's coming on, and I'm talking trolling for, say, just an example, bluefin tuna, you actually, with a transom mount, again, because you're going naturally up and down, the back of the boat smashes on the water and actually causes water interference, trolling speed. And you just don't have clear picture unless you're going with it. Now, with a through hull, it's actually in the hull of the boat under the bottom, so it actually doesn't come out of the water. Hence why you have a clearer picture.
What about, so say you do it yourself though, will you have issues with like warranty or...
That comes back to you mentioning your Staby before.
Yeah.
So I know a couple of people that have cut through hull transducers into their Staby grass.
Yep.
You have to...
As in done it themselves?
Yeah, done it themselves. I know a couple of people that done it themselves. Now, does it avoid warranty? You're going to have to talk to them properly. Yeah. I think it probably would have something to do with it.
Especially if it then drops out.
And you sink. Your boat sinks.
How did it happen? Mate, I've got no idea.
Well, I didn't put a through hull in it.
I mean, we did recover the boat and there was a giant hole in the bottom, but apart from that,
must have been the marine shop.
It was an iceberg.
It's
that cold.
It was, so you have to be careful with insurance reasons for, now it is harder to get through hull transducers in your aluminium boats because fiberglass.
But if I went to Christie's Beach, I've bought my Stabycraft from there.
I don't know if they'll be allowed to do it. I don't think they...
But if they're an authorised dealer, you would think...
They'd have some sort of pull.
Yep.
Yeah, well, there would be some conversation whether the Stabycraft do it. You'd probably have the discussion when you order the boat and Stabycraft might do it in the actual production in itself.
Gotcha.
I'm only using Staby as an example because you've got a Staby.
I'm
talking about aluminium in general. Aluminium is harder to put these through hulls in than glass.
Yep.
Just because of the way they're built through the aluminium and you've got it. That's just the way. Glass, you can put them in much easier. Now... Nearly every glass boat that it won't affect your warranty unless you do it, you don't do it property, properly. But mine, for instance, I think Melbourne Marine Centre did mine. They know what they're doing, and they put it in. It's not going to affect me whatsoever. So they are... But
say, for example, they're an authorised North Bank seller.
Yeah, seller,
so
too.
They're never going to have... Yet, if you do a third market sort of or third party,
you might have issues.
Yeah.
So just contact your dealership and ask them about the warranty before you do this. Number one, you'll catch more fish. You'll have a better picture, whether it's marlin, tuna, or even just sounding for snapper or wherever you are. And also traveling at speed. I sit at top speed in my boat and in your boat, and I have
115 kilometers an hour.
Stupid.
In 4 meters as well.
I try to. I still have.
Going back to Nick's question, you know, 24 to 28 knots, not in Aaron's boat, Nick.
I was thinking 24 knots. I'm going to do that. No, I shouldn't say that.
Coming out of the harbour.
It's
putting the thing on the trailer.
Don't you talk about warranty claims?
Sorry,
don't say that. I've got a few cracks in my boat on this sword. No, I don't. But it's you get such a better picture. And the reason I brought this conversation up is because, like I said, I was in Gold Coast. I was traveling out, and they marked up this new reef, and they went back to it, and they had a crazy session on the snap up, and it was in 100 meters of water, and they were traveling at speed, picked it up. And they went back to it that afternoon on the way back where they only just tickled up on the sounder, but the reef was like 80 meters long.
There's
and that's all you
great
need.
Great example of great electronics.
Exactly.
Well installed.
And whether it's a 1 kilowatt, a 2 kilowatt, a 3 kilowatt, whatever it is, I think through hull is a must. And it's yes, it is pricey at times, but, and I'm not going to give prices at the minute because every transducer is different, blah, blah, blah. I run a high white 175 kilowatt. That's what I run on my boat for snapper, barrels, and marlin.
Mate, this is a boating and fishing show.
All right, well, then
Everything's expensive.
There's $55,000. It's
the only thing that's free is listening to us.
It's probably still charging, aren't we?
That is Reg Review, our product review of the week, talking about the benefits of through hull transducers, or transducer if you're just going the one. Plenty more real
Your
adventures.
Boat definitely doesn't get covered under warranty because there's 64 transducers in it. That means there's 64 holes.
Plenty more real adventures coming up after the break. Red's Tip, the Flying Gaff, and plenty more.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. Before we get to Red's Tip, Golden State last week, Redmond won the NBA championship. Hit our radar.
Is that tennis?
NBA.
Oh, basketball.
Hit our
sorry.
Radar. But, you know, for sport, you know, we're on SEN. It's a sports station. But this really hit our radar.
There's nothing like an early morning launch out the harbor. There's nothing really better besides winning a championship. But boating is definitely second to playing ball and feeling the thrills of that competition.
We love Clay. He's our new favourite NBA player here at Real Adventures because, see what happens? You play something online.
This is some of your worst work, I'm calling it.
What do you mean?
I don't even know who that is.
That's Clay Thompson. Multiple all-star, and he is talking about his love of boating.
Is he friends with LeBron?
He's played against LeBron.
He's played against LeBron.
Red's Tip, what do you got?
I don't have anything. You've got Red's Tip. I'm gaffing you. No, you know what Red's Tip is.
Yeah.
When you're doing it's a little bit of a gaff. You know, we'll do Red's Tip and the gaff together. I'm taking both. You're doing a little
good
footy.
Because we're running
out of
time.
Oh, no, that's why I said it. When you're doing a family school holiday day.
Yes.
And you're standing.
School holidays at the moment. Of course, we hope everyone's been hitting the water, catching a few fish.
Dangerfield's a crowd favourite down at the cattery, and the kids are standing there.
Not anymore. We had open session during the week.
Yep.
Not too many 35s rolling around. Back of the line. Just Cameron, unless they must be Ablett
senior
fans.
Who's the favourite? Who's the favourite now?
They've got to
be
Ablett senior fans.
Is Jez Cameron a favourite down there?
Very popular.
Very popular. Going back to my thing. When you ask a crowd of kids questions about football, ask Tyson Stengel what won the premiership or something.
I did. We were giving out footballs.
Yes.
And I'm like, I just don't want to give them to anyone.
You asked a pack of kids about who won the premiership in the SANFL.
Correct, wanted to see if
I don't even know what the SANFL is. Where the pack of 8-year-old kids going
to
know?
Wanted to see if they were footballing scholars.
South Australia, no one cares about them.
You've just realised that we broadcast straight into South Australia every Saturday
morning. That was a shocking question to ask 8 to 12-year-old kids.
And we love broadcasting throughout.
You asked who won the competition, and they all said Melbourne, thinking that you're talking about the AFL.
Yeah, they had no idea. They needed to listen to the question. The wonderful.
You're getting the gaff.
The wonderful Woodville West Torrens, of course. Tyson kick.
Who was it? What was the team called? Sorry,
Woodville West Torrens.
I have never heard of that in my life.
I think Tyson kick three in the granny as well.
He's actually
fine. 29 goals.
I'm not a small forward fan. He's on my radar. He's on my radar for my favourite player at the moment.
Why? Because he's just best on every week.
He's just good. Wrap the show up.
No, we've got the flying gaff to finish off. And no, well, that was your flying gaff.
Just wrap it up. We need to go.
This is where we've landed.
You're playing footy today. Oh, I seriously hope you're on better than this.
7:50 tonight.
I'm coming.
You're coming.
You've got me some tickets. They're kind of you. Thank you. Jesus. And I'm going to come down to the rooms afterwards and annoy you. And if you lose, I'm not coming.
Lockie Cartland.
I've got a friend ringing me.
On that note, we'll see you next week. This is what happens when the COVID happens and we have to produce our own show at different stages and we end up sort of meandering through. Joel, can you please edit that bit out? We'll see you next week. We hope you've enjoyed Real Adventures this morning. Yeah, it's time to go fishing.